Welcome to the Wheat Profit Podcast. My name is Carmen Prang, and today we are going to be talking about the Fertilizer Use Survey. The Fertilizer Use Survey assists in the understanding of the current state of fertilizer management and fills the gap of publicly available data for fertilizer use, management, and adoption of 4R nutrient stewardship. The survey helps increase 4R awareness while providing unbiased data on fertilizer practices and trends as they relate to things like crop type, region, soil practices, yield target versus yield achieved, and many more aspects. It provides metrics to support our communications, advocacy, and extension activities. In 2021, Sask Wheat, along with Alberta Wheat and Manitoba Crop Alliance, approved funding for the addition of Western Canadian wheat data to be included in the survey. This means that there is now baseline data for corn, soybeans, winter wheat, spring wheat, flax, sunflower, and canola in Canada. This information is essential for developing sustainability metrics and sound 4R nutrient stewardship strategies. To provide us background, as well as a few highlights on the wheat side of the survey, we have brought in two special guests. Today I have with me Sarah Healy, who is a market research manager with Stratus Ag. Stratus is a market research company focused entirely on agriculture. As a market research manager, she helps farmers to be heard and helps clients get the real story so they can make better decisions. To do that, they survey growers and retailers to get their thoughts on different topics in ag, including the fertilizer use survey. They then take the data from those surveys and transform it into clear, useful information that is easy to understand. I'm also joined by Cassandra Cotton from Fertilizer Canada. Cassandra is a vice president at Fertilizer Canada, where she is responsible for building a robust program and policy platform that forms the foundation for the organization's advocacy work. Specifically, she directs the development and delivery of a number of wide-ranging issues, including 4R nutrient stewardship, climate policy, production regulation, safety and security, and transportation, through engagement with industry members, stakeholders, and government agencies. So welcome, Sarah and Cassandra, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So for those who have never heard about the Fertilizer Use Survey or are maybe not familiar with what it all entails, Cassandra, can you provide some more background information on the survey and from your perspective, the purpose behind it?
Sure, yeah. So like as you indicated, I guess right off the top, the survey has been running since 2014. It was initially part of a government-funded project, sort of a joint effort with Pulse Canada and some others, to get an indication of what kind of sustainable practices were taking place at the farm level, specifically related to 4R nutrient stewardship. So applying the right source of fertilizer at the right rate, the right time, the right place. And so once that funding agreement was completed, we felt we had really established like an excellent data set that we didn't want to lose and really needed to be continued. So we took on the effort and looked to our industry counterparts who felt the data had a lot of value to them as well, and asked them to fund. And then over the years, it's been expanding both regionally and different crop types, like you said. Just in 2021, we added some further crops and regions. And actually in 2022, we've went further and added Prince Edward Island and Quebec regions. We don't have the results of those yet. Those will be going out this, this winter. But, you know, in terms of the purpose, I think it's really quite simple. It's to collect for on-farm nutrient management data. So not just information on, you know, how farmers, how much they use, but actually how it's applied, you know, what their yield results were, how they made their fertility decisions, their awareness levels of 4R. And, you know, as far as I'm aware, I don't think there's any other country level data like this. For sure, you know, Stats Canada collects information on fertilizer, but it doesn't really go beyond rate. And so, you know, now we have this insight into how farmers are applying their fertilizer, levels of awareness of the 4R program, barriers to adoption, what kind of opportunities there are, regional differences. I think there's a lot of value and purpose in the data.
So like I mentioned before, we just added the Western Canadian wheat data in 2021. So what is the benefit to having that data included now with the rest of it?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, generally there's, you know, crop rotations in different regions. And so previously we kind of looked at the data and you can make some assumptions about, you know, how farmers are applying their nutrients without having the crop specific data to a certain extent, like, you know, essentially assuming, well, if they're applying X concepts on X crop, then they're likely applying it across the whole farming operation. But, you know, having the more full concrete picture on the different crop types is definitely important. And I think particularly to like telling the story, this is good like data to have, but, you know, when you're looking at the survey, what it's doing for those farmers is helping to showcase both how sustainable they're being in their current practices compared to our competitors, and but also identifying that baseline for measuring progress going forward. I think given the conversation, certainly in the political space today on, you know, climate change and GHG emissions, the sooner they have this, you know, data, the better. I think the other day, actually, someone had said to me, just like talking about measurement and like having that baseline data and how important that is, because she like equated it to like being on a diet and saying like, you're not going to weigh yourself when you're like 6 weeks into the diet for the first time and then like, you know, not get credit for like the progress you made over that time. And I think that's sort of how I look at this survey and some other things on measurement and data and how important it is to get that baseline to measure your progress.
No, I definitely like that reference. That's a good way to think about it. How does Fertilizer Canada use this data from the survey? And, you know, who uses the results? So you touched on that a little bit, but is it for the farmers? Is it for the industry? Who mainly is using it?
There's a lot of uses for the survey. I can provide you with maybe a couple examples, but like certainly I would say industry uses it. We use it to develop our own, you know, targets and things like that. Others are using it for that purpose. Academics are using it in their research to make some assumptions about uptake. Governments are doing the same. I think, you know, we set our own targets, like I said, from our strategic plan. So, you know, we can say, for example, in the survey, and maybe Sarah will touch on this, but overall, like when we look at adoption across Canada on all crop types within the survey in 2021, there was like 25 million acres that were surveyed were operating under like a basic level of 4Rs. So within the survey, that was like 50% of acres that we surveyed were operating under the 4Rs. So we can make some assumptions about what the potential uptake could look like out to 2030, out to 2050, if the proper incentives were in place, or we could accelerate adoption. And so, you know, we've set targets to increase the number of 4R acres, both like validated through agronomy programming and through the survey. And then I suppose at a higher level too, with government, like we've commissioned a study recently related to the 30% emission reduction target to look at building out a path forward to 2030. If we could get realistic but aggressive adoption rates of some of those practices that we know reduce emissions, where could we get? And we definitely use the fertilizer use survey to look at where those practices were currently, and then made some assumptions about what we could get to. So I think it has a lot of importance, not only from just the raw data and farmers using it to even look at what their peers are doing, academics using it for research, but in policy decision-making as well.
No, that's great to know that it's being used in so many different ways and will be definitely helpful moving forward. So I think we're going to switch to Sarah now. So Sarah, could you explain how the survey is conducted? So things like the number of producers that were asked and, you know, how they're selected.
So this is an online survey that we do every year with growers across Canada. So the survey is emailed to growers and we collect data between November and December of the year. So for the 2021 fertilizer use survey, We were collecting data again from the 1st of November until about the 27th of December. So the grower would get a link in their email to do the survey. Survey is about 25 minutes, takes them to do it. And we always pay the grower as an incentive and a thank you for their participation. It's really important that we're paying the growers for their time for sharing this information with us. So they're usually given an incentive of $20 to $40. We design the questionnaire and that email goes out to the grower. We have a very large unbiased database of Canadian farmers that this survey will go out to. And in order to participate in the survey, the grower has to be a decision maker for fertilizer use on their farm. And then they would have had to have grown a minimum number of acres depending on region. So for Western Canada in 2021, in order to participate in the survey, they would have grown, had to have grown either a minimum 300 acres of canola and or 300 acres of spring wheat. In 2021 for spring wheat, we heard from 544 spring wheat growers. We also heard from 509 canola growers, but today we're going to talk about spring wheat. So a huge part of the survey, when it's done fielding, is cleaning the data to make sure that all of the individual records are accurate. So looking for obvious duplications of fertilizer types, making sure if the fertilizer is a blend that it contains all dry or all liquid components. We do some work in the back end to calculate the minor nutrient components. So for example, calculating the amount of nitrogen in MAP. We look at the total pounds of each nutrient and we clean outliers, making sure that all the data is looking normal, and we check for missing rates and things like that. So that's some of the things that we do in the background. So if it's okay with you, I'll keep going and maybe go over some of the results from the 2021 fertilizer use survey. Okay, so for each fertilizer type, either use an custom blend or applies an unblended product. We asked the respondents how many acres they applied and the rate of actual nutrient per acre. So I'm going to go through the fertilizer timing, source, and placement as a percent of total volume for N, P, K, and S. So the volumes of each nutrient were calculated by multiplying the acres treated by the application rate. So first, we'll start with nitrogen. So for nitrogen timing in spring wheat, we saw a higher percentage of the nitrogen volume being applied in the spring at planting, and a lower percent of the nitrogen volume was applied in the fall of the previous year. So these are the kind of patterns that we look for. So about 78% of the nitrogen volume was applied in the spring at planting, 16% of that volume was applied in the fall, and about 5% before planting. So next, if we look or talk about fertilizer sources, so some of the things that we saw in 2021, and all of the data in the 2021 fertilizer use survey for spring wheat was compared to 2016. So 2016 would have been the last time that we included spring wheat in the survey. So whenever I'm talking about differences in 2021, it's compared back to that 2016 data. So for fertilizer sources for nitrogen, we saw a lower percentage of the nitrogen volume being applied as anhydrous ammonia, UAN, as well as other nitrogen sources. So the growers in the survey are given a very long pick list of the different fertilizers that could be used, but there's also a spot where they can enter something in if it's not included in the list. But it's a very, very long list of the different sources of nitrogen. So we group other together for all of the sort of smaller nitrogen sources. So some of the increases that we saw in terms of fertilizer sources in 2021 was a higher percentage of the nitrogen volume was being applied as ESN or Super U, as well as urea. So about 56% of the nitrogen volume was going down as urea. And then the last of the three things that we're going to look at for each nutrient is placement. So for nitrogen placement in wheat, almost 40% of the nitrogen was mid-row banded at planting, and another 27% was side banded at planting. We did have a little bit that was seed placed, so about 10% of the volume was seed placed, and about 12% was banded in the fall. So the last thing that we'll look at for nitrogen specific to spring wheat were rates. So we saw that the average rate of nitrogen in 2021 was quite a bit higher than it was back in 2016. So back in 2016, the average nitrogen rate was about 87 pounds per acre. And in 2021, we saw an average nitrogen rate of about 108 pounds per acre. So I'll just go through all of those things and summarize them for phosphorus, potassium, and sulfur as well. Looking at the timing, so when phosphorus was applied in spring wheat in 2021, about 90% of the total phosphorus was being applied in the spring at planting. Very small percentage of the volume was being applied either before planting in the fall or after planting in crop. Looking at phosphorus source, so MAP continues to be the dominant source of phosphorus. About almost 80% of the phosphorus volume went down as MAP. We also saw a decrease in the amount of P volume being applied as ammonium polyphosphate, as well as some of the other phosphorus sources. So really the dominant P source in 2021 was MAP. For placement, almost half of the phosphorus was seed placed. Another quarter was side banded at planting, and another, you know, less than 20% was being mid-row banded at planting. So again, majority of that phosphorus being applied at planting. In terms of the average phosphorus rate, fairly consistent with what we saw the last time we did the study in 2016. So about 32 pounds per acre was the average phosphorus rate. Potassium is next. So for timing of potassium in spring wheat, about 81% of the K volume was being applied at planting. And this was actually a decrease from 2016. So back in 2016, about 90% of the potassium was being applied in the spring at planting. And we think that some of that was going to applications in the fall. So we did see an increase in the volume of K that was being applied in the fall of the previous year. For potassium sources, majority of the potassium that's going down is as potash, about 90% of the total K volume. We also saw the use of liquid potash decline in 2021, and we saw the use of alpine increase in 2021. Placement, so almost 30% was being side banded at planting, another 27% being mid-row banded at planting, with about 20% that was seed placed. And then rates, very similar to what we saw in 2016. So the average potassium rate was 8 pounds per acre. And then finally for sulfur. So again, for timing, we saw a lower percentage of the sulfur volume being applied at planting in the spring. So just under 80% of that S volume was being applied at planting, as opposed to about 87% of the volume that was applied at planting back in 2016. And again, we saw that uptick of sulfur being applied in the fall in 2021. And then sulfur sources, we saw a decline in the use of ammonium sulfate, but that was still the primary source of sulfur in 2021. Some of the other sources of sulfur, but less so, microessentials was used, ammonium thiosulfate, Biosol, Super S, Tiger 90 were some of the other sources of sulfur. Placement, so most of the sulfur volume was either side banded, mid-row banded, or seed placed at planting. And then finally for the rate, a little bit of an uptick in the average sulfur rate in 2021. So we have 8 pounds per acre in 2021 versus about 7 back in 2016. So we have a couple of other slides specific to spring wheat that we'll talk about. And one of those things is asking the growers about their fertilizer program. So we wanted to understand the fertilizer programs a little better. So we asked growers whether they used variable rate technology based on prescription maps on all of their wheat acres or some of their wheat acres. And then we asked if they tailor their fertilizer program on a field by field basis or if they use the same program for all of their fields. And so what we saw in 2021 was an increase in the percent of growers who used variable rates on some of their fields. We also saw an increase in the percentage of growers who are tailoring their program, fertilizer program, field by field. And we saw a decrease in the percent of growers who were saying that they use the same program for all of their fields. Another question that we ask is about the use of a nitrogen fixing crop in the previous year. So it, whether or not they planted a nitrogen fixing crop on all of their spring wheat fields last year, on some or on none, what we saw was that there was an increase in the percent of growers who said, yes, I apply or I planted a nitrogen fixing crop in either all or some of my spring wheat fields the year prior. And we saw a decline in the percentage of growers who said that they didn't apply nitrogen fixing crop the year before. So we also asked growers whether they set specific rates for each wheat field based on expected crop yield. So what we saw was that just under half set rates by fields. And if we look at that across geography and different demographic regions, we saw that growers were more likely to set rates based on expected crop yield in Manitoba and less so in Saskatchewan. And we also saw that larger farms were more likely to set rates by fields. And also those who said that they were very familiar with 4R were more likely to set rates by field as opposed to those who don't really know anything about the 4R program. So that's always interesting to see. So another thing that we ask the growers is about their approach or how they decide what their fertilizer rate should be for their spring wheat. So some of the things that are included in the pick list for this question are whether they use soil tests, calculation based on nutrient balance, assessment of spring wheat fields, provincial government recommendations, things like that. And so pretty consistently across NPK and S, the growers are telling us that they mainly use the soil test reports, nutrient balance, and they rely on their past experience to set their fertilizer rates. So a lot fewer are saying that they rely on variable rate prescription maps or provincial government recommendations. They seem to be really relying on those soil tests and nutrient balance to make those decisions. So another thing that we measured was the use of enhanced efficiency fertilizers. So all respondents were asked if they applied nitrogen in the form of ESN or SuperU. And they were also asked if they applied a nitrogen stabilizer with any of their primary nitrogen fertilizers. And so in the study, we actually split the EEF data so that ESN and SuperU were separate, and the nitrogen stabilizers were also separated out into nitrification inhibitors, urease inhibitors, or dual inhibitors. And so for spring wheat, what we saw was 16% of the nitrogen volume that was applied in spring wheat in 2021 went down in a protected form. And we know that the majority of that nitrogen was going down in the spring at planting. And about 13% of the nitrogen volume that was applied at planting went down as an EEF. So about 5% of that being ESN and another 5% being SuperU. We asked about yields as well. So at the beginning of the survey, we asked what was your target yield in your spring wheat this year, and then what was your actual yield? And so there was a little bit of a difference between target and actual. We remember what a tough year 2021 was. So the growers told us that their target yield was about 63 bushels per acre and actual yields were about 40 bushels per acre. So a little bit of a difference there just based on what a tough year that was. So the second last thing that I wanted to talk about specific to spring wheat was factors that growers consider when they set their target yield. So we asked them, what are the main factors and what are some of the other factors that you consider when you set your yield? So the majority, so 63% of growers are saying that they consider the average yields that they've experienced over the past number of years. That's the main thing, the main factor they consider when they set their target yield at the beginning of the year. 16% say that weather or moisture conditions at the time when they set their target yield is the main factor. And then a handful are saying things like soil productivity limitations or looking at the yield data for the specific varieties that they're planting. But in the majority of cases, it's the average yield from years prior or past experience that the growers are relying on. And so one of the last things I'll talk about specific to spring wheat from the 2021 fertilizer use survey was the consistency criteria for spring wheat. So we're able to determine the percent of spring wheat acres that meet 4R consistency criteria. So to do this, we determined the percent of spring wheat acres with level one compliance. So we looked at whether or not growers' fertilizer practices matched against 4R criteria for rate, timing, and placement. And for level two compliance, we looked at whether or not growers were working with a 4R designated agronomist. And so for 2021, we saw about 58% of spring wheat acres were level one compliant, and about 16% of spring wheat acres were level two compliant, meaning working with that 4R designated agronomist. So I think it's really positive to see, you know, 58% of spring wheat acres that are compliant with 4R is a really positive outlook or positive thing to see. And unfortunately, we didn't have the trending data from 2016, but we will be able to trend this year for 2022. So it'll be really interesting to see year over year if we're noticing any patterns. So Cassandra, I just wanted to maybe stop here and see if you had any comments or notes, because I generally think that this is a positive thing to see. Even though we can't see the trending data, but I know, for example, for canola, we did see a significant increase in the percent of canola acres that were level one compliant. So I really hope that this year we have some more good news to add. So,
yeah, thanks. I mean, I think this is one of the beauties of the fertilizer use survey is like the trends. And I think that's what's exciting, like Sarah said, for 2022 to look at, compliance. And I mean, you have to take into consideration too, I suppose, that this is like farmers self-assessing, right? This is farmers self-assessing about where they fit. But at the same time, I think it is a really great start when you look at almost 60% are self-assessing as being compliant with how we define, a basic 4R acre. And there is 16% working with an agronomist. It's a start, but you can see where there's room for improvement. We're not starting at ground zero on it, but there's definitely room to see an improvement. I think the other area where I'm really excited to see where the survey goes next year is on those target yields and where the yields went. I mean, obviously, as Sarah said, it was kind of a devastating year in 2021, but
yeah.
I'd be very curious to see what the rates look like for 2022 and where the yields go, because there is so much residual nitrogen that was probably in the ground and, you know, how that works out. And I think that'll be really interesting to see where the trend goes there.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. I think also even looking at nitrogen rates and seeing what's happening there, especially with not even just, weather and environment, but just all of the other issues that growers face this year with supply and stuff like that as well. Seeing if growers were thinking more about reducing their nitrogen rate this year, perhaps, than they were in previous years. I'd be really curious to see that as well. Yeah, so I thought maybe I would go over some of the general fertilizer practices now that we've gone through some of the more specific data to spring wheat. So for the general fertilizer practice section, we combine the data for all of Western Canada. So for the next couple of minutes, I'll just talk about some of the more general fertilizer practices as it relates to both canola and spring wheat. So the first thing that I'll touch on is who growers are turning to for fertilizer advice. So is it an independent advisor? Is it someone associated with their retailer? Is it a dealer or a sales rep? And so what we saw in 2021 was that more growers were turning to a professional advisor associated with their retailer. So we saw a significant increase in the percent of respondents who said that's who they're turning to for fertilizer advice. So 23% are saying that they looked to that retailer associated advisor. Another quarter, 26% are saying that they had advice from an independent advisor. And then about 35% are saying they relied on their ag retailer, dealer or sales rep. Handful saying that they relied on provincial fertilizer recommendations. And then we also saw a decrease in the percent of respondents who said that they didn't turn to anyone for fertilizer advice. So another thing that we can talk about is soil testing. So how often are growers testing their soil for, we'll talk about nitrogen and phosphorus as an example. So about a third of growers are saying that they test their soil for nitrogen every year. And we also saw an increase in the percent of growers who test soil nitrogen every 3 years. And we saw a decline in the percent of growers who said that they either never test for soil nitrogen or that they do it infrequently, so less than every 4 or 5 years. And we saw something very similar with phosphorus. So a third are testing their soil for P every year. We saw an uptick in the percentage of growers who test for soil P every 3 years. And then we saw, again, that decline in the percentage of growers who are saying that they infrequently or never test for soil phosphorus. And another really important thing that we asked, like Cassandra said, was about 4R familiarity. So how familiar are you with the concept of 4R? And so something that we saw that was really positive in 2021 was we saw an increase in the percent of growers who were saying that they're very familiar with 4R. So just under 30% are saying that they're very familiar with it. About 35% are saying that they're somewhat familiar. And we did see a decline in the percentage of growers who said they've never heard of 4R. So that's another positive story, because it means that we're getting more communication out there about 4R. And that we'll keep trending this every year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in 2022. So we also ask the growers if they have a formal 4R plan in place. And if they do have a formal 4R plan in place, what do they see as the biggest benefits of having that plan in place on their farm? And so 66% of growers who do have a 4R plan in place say that the improved soil quality and nutrient availability, that's the biggest benefit that they see of having that plan. But 61% are also saying that knowing that they're using the best environmental stewardship practices was a benefit, and then the increase in economic return was another benefit that the growers mentioned. So we also, on the other side, asked growers who don't have a 4R plan in place, what are some of the reasons, what are the main reasons and other reasons for not having a 4R plan in place on your farm? About a core, or 12% of growers are saying lack of proven benefits were sort of the main reason why they don't have a plan in place. Or some mentioned lack of incentives, others mentioned costs. And so these were some of the reasons why they say they don't actually have that formal plan. And then in terms of 4R practices, so we asked whether or not the growers think that the fertilizer practices they have in place on their farm right now comply with 4R. And so those who say that they don't think that their fertilizer practices comply with 4R, we ask what the reasons for that would be. And again, they're mentioning cost as well as storage. But interestingly, of the people who do have a 4R plan in place, we asked whether or not the costs under that plan are higher or lower with the plan. And so about 60% are saying that the costs are the same with or without the 4R plan, and only about 3% are saying that the costs are a lot higher under the 4R plan. So, you know, I know that a lot of the reasons that some of the growers who either don't have 4R plans in place or don't have 4R practices on their farm are saying that the cost is one of the reasons why, but it's clear from some of the growers who do have a plan in place that it seems to be that their costs are about the same. And then the final thing that I'll just touch on is where growers are going to learn about 4R. And it seems that ag retailers seem to be the biggest advisor of information for 4R. So 60% of growers are saying they turn to their ag retailer. Another 30% saying they're going to CCA, and about 27% are saying they're looking to their PAG or TAG for information about 4R. So those were some of the slides that I had to share, or some of the information from the fertilizer use survey that I had to share. It's definitely a project that I spend a lot of time on. So
you do. So do I. Yeah. I think maybe something I would say just on the like awareness and barriers and benefits, I think that's to where a lot of the value is to like informing policy and government, but also like helping growers understand what their counterparts are doing, what kind of barriers they're facing or benefits that they're seeing on the farm. I think it's been very informative for us, because then we can look at the barriers to adoption and say, okay, you know, a third of growers are soil testing for nitrogen every year. That's great, but how can we accelerate that higher? And what are the barriers to getting there so that it helps us, you know, direct communication to growers and on that side? And then it's always interesting to see the cost aspect come out because, you know, as we talk about so much about sustainability and like you said, you know, emissions reduction is a huge initiative right now globally, but in Canada, and how do we produce more food and contribute to global food security, particularly today and, you know, this political climate that we live in and, you know, crisis happening abroad, but still be sustainable in our practices and produce more food. And I think a lot of what we're seeing coming out of the survey is the need for growers to be incentivized. I think a lot of those earlier, like basic level practices, right, are that's why they're at that like 56% adoption rates.
Yeah.
Because the return on investment is realized much sooner, right? If you're soil testing annually, if you're, you know, doing some of those more basic practices, you're seeing the return on investment. But the higher you get up into those more intermediate or advanced practices, it requires a lot more capital investment on the part of the grower who's taking a risk, obviously, annually on their farm. And so it's kind of like that whole concept of incremental improvement over time, but also, you know, how do we incentivize growers who, for those more advanced practices, aren't going to see that return on investment realized in the short term? It's going to take longer to get there. So I think a lot of that is proven to be really interesting and why we've been advocating so heavily for growers to be paid for the societal benefit that they're providing with, you know, reduced carbon emissions and things like that.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for presenting some of the wheat highlights. It is definitely some great food for thought that you presented. And of course, like we mentioned, this isn't all of the information that the survey covers or all of the crops for that fact too. So Cassandra, where can we find the full survey if growers or others are interested in knowing more?
Yeah, so we actually have the results published annually on our website. It is available for public access. We do password protect it. But only so that we can see who's interested in the data and kind of communicate with them on, you know, new results or upcoming webinars and things like that. So, yeah, you can just go to our website and request the password and we can provide that.
And so you have also talked about how this relates back to the fertilizer emissions reduction and greenhouse gases. But can you go a little bit more in depth on that about how this can be used in those causes?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the examples that I didn't really talk about is sort of the National Inventory Report, which for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's essentially Canada's method for reporting its GHG emissions globally, and it's compartmentalized into different sectors, and agriculture has a section and fertilizer has a section. Right now, the way that we report globally on our emissions for fertilizer, it's only sensitive to rate when it comes to that. So it still doesn't actually account for those on-farm practices that we know, you know, reduce emissions, like the use of enhanced efficiency products, split application, banding, some of those other practices. And, you know, the current adoption levels of those practices, according to the survey, are actually quite substantial on the ground. So the way that we're reporting as a country is quite behind, reflecting what's actually happening on the ground. So, you know, one of the things that we're really pushing for is for, you know, for Environment and Climate Change Canada and the government to work more closely with industry to utilize the survey and other points of data to support more of a joint effort to capture what's actually happening on the ground in Canada.
Perfect. So Sarah, you kind of touched on it a bit, but can you remind us again when the next survey is and how producers can get involved? And are you looking for more producers at this time to get involved?
Always. We're always looking for more growers to get involved. So for the 2022 survey, it is already in the field. So like I had said, it starts in November every year. But that's not to say that you still can't sign up for surveys to participate in next year's fertilizer use survey or all of the other surveys that we have. So we're always looking for farmers to provide their voice and their insight into topics. And it's the best way to get your opinions heard by agribusiness. So if you want to sign up to participate in any Stratus survey, you can visit our website at stratusresearch.com and you can click to sign up and you'll receive invitations to participate in our surveys, including a fertilizer use survey for 2023.
Sorry, I was just going to add that, you know, the more robust that we can make this data, the better, right? The more we can provide a real sample across Canada, the better. So we're always looking for grower participation for sure. And like Sarah said, I think that is the most important part that this survey allows growers to have their voice heard in terms of what's happening on the ground, because we don't have that data captured anywhere else currently. Thank you so much for having us today, Carmen. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. I think it's always great to talk about fertilizer use. So anytime.
Awesome. So that wraps up all the time we have for today. A huge thank you to Cassandra and Sarah for joining us on the Wheat Prophet.
Thank you for listening to the Wheat Prophet podcast. For podcast archives, agronomy information, and more about Sask Wheat, go to saskwheat.ca.